Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
This is Patriots Playbook.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the seven route.
Patriots Playbook, breaking down last Sunday's game.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
Next Sunday's game.
Want to go odd. 5.
Patriots Playbook.
51 mirror.
And the rest of the 2008 NFL season.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
And some of the fun stuff in between.
Even. 51 grapes. Even. 51 grapes.
And now... he's John Rook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
We're rolling along for week one in our 2008 NFL season with Patriots Playbook. John Rook joined today by Eric Scalavino of PFW. Your emails welcomed, webradio@patriots.com. That's the email address. It always is. It never changes. Telephone as well, 508-543-7482. Again, 508-543-7482. Typically, on Thursday's show, we like to sort of begin to preview just a little bit more toward what is actually going to transpire or what you think will transpire on the football field on Sunday. So to that end, if you've got predictions already ready to roll for Friday's or for a Sunday's encounter, let's hear them. Send them off.
You fighting a cold there?
Yeah, can you tell?
A little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, it deepens your radio voice, though. Ah!
Last night I actually had the good VOG thing going. The voice of God thing going.
Oh, yeah.
So I scared the dog half to death.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say you scared your kids half to death.
I know. I do that every day anyway. I scared the dog half to death. And I'm like, I felt bad after that was over just because I gave her one of those.
As we went. Yard!
Exactly. So. No, I just, I had one of these sore throat things that you catch from the kids and it just manifests itself into a cold. I actually feel great. It's just it sounds kind of...
Have you ever had that during a home game when you had to call it?
Oh,
really?
Yeah.
So you've had the voice of God during...
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
It's happened. It's unfortunate, but I feel like, some of the deeper tonal quality that I have is actually when I'm sick. Mm-hmm. Can't have that when I'm well. So, of course, then again, people would say I'm normally sick anyway, so that's the way it works. I heard something on the radio today. In fact, a couple of different things on the radio today that I kind of wanted to toss out here, Eric. And I know that, guys on PFW certainly had to mention this because I didn't catch much of the show today. But fact is that the rumors, and I'm headed to Tampa tomorrow for a college football game. I'm doing,
Which one are you doing?
Kansas USF tomorrow.
Okay.
And so I'm reading the Tampa papers and I'm listening to some things and I'm thinking, these guys are getting ready to ditch Jeff Garcia. Ha! They're getting ready to maybe cut him loose.
Cut him completely.
Because
their team's going to rally. Their team's going to step up.
Step up because he's fresh.
Oh, come on now.
Or he's crisp. Is that what that was?
I just didn't feel real crisp on my
there you go.
Decision making.
nice lisp. Anyway, fact is that he and John Gruden are not getting along. They're not getting along. And we've already know that Brian Greasy is going to start at quarterback this weekend. So I don't know.
They have a rookie right
behind him.
Josh Johnson?
Is that what his name is? Shoot, I have no idea. I haven't even looked at the Tampa Bay.
Who's their third quarterback then? If he goes, if they cut him loose.
It seemed like we saw. Did we not see him when we played him in the exhibition season?
We did, but they had Sims at that point.
Yeah, but Sims, I don't think played against us, though, did he?
Yes, he did.
He did?
Yeah.
See, that shows you how much I actually remember from that game. I mentally clicked that game off in the second quarter. Anyway, fact is that in reading through the stuff, looks like they're willing to take just about anything for him. In fact, if they don't get any offers, they're going to cut him loose.
Really?
Because he and Gruden are at odds. So the question to you is, would you?
Jeff Garcia?
Yeah.
I think you would.
I think you'd have to. I think you'd have to give it serious consideration.
Depends what the Bucks would want in return. You're saying that
if they cut him loose, I think it's a no-brainer.
If they just cut him, yeah. If they have to give up something, it would depend on what they're asking
for. Well, I'm sure they could get a conditional pick. I mean, they could probably get him for a fourth or a fifth round choice and that might improve, around if he actually plays, I don't know, takes 10 games or whatever, who knows?
Yeah, and I'm not saying to get him and automatically throw him in as the starter either. I'm saying bring him in, let him learn the offense, give Castle his chance.
Right.
But in the event that something happens, Castle goes down, do you want to go right to O'Connell as the rookie, or do you want to go with a veteran who at least...
This is why it's the perfect scenario, though, Eric, because you're exactly right. You still are behind Matt Castle. You still give him... this is your team, just like they've said this week, and why they, you know, signed Matt Gutierrez back again, because they thought he was the best option as a third quarterback. You can still go get Jeff Garcia and say, all right, we've thought about this in a backup sense. First of all, because Jeff's got no other place to go right now. I mean, if he gets cut by Tampa, where's he going to go?
Maybe Tennessee.
Maybe. What was that? Okay. The band is striking early. Are we through yet? Thank you very much. Good night. See you next week. The fact
hasn't given you an answer yet. He loves quarterbacks, but it's he likes to just date. He doesn't like to marry. I'm the starter here. I'm going to choke it to death. And until somebody pulls my grip off of it, then it's my job.
Wow. See, now, I'm a little scared about Gradecki, though, because he finds this stuff.
Wasn't hard to find that one, though.
That was from July 28th.
Oh, okay, all right. So he's got a grip on the job, does he? Well, not anymore, apparently.
No, I guess not.
That grip is now loosened up somewhat. I think it makes too much sense not to do it. I mean,
yeah, I think you're right.
You can still bring him in and still say Castle's your starter. We long thought about having a veteran backup. And if something does happen and either Castle gets dinged or he does not perform up to their standards, boom, there you go. You give him time to learn the system. He's a veteran. I mean, my gosh, how long is it going to take him?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not like bringing in a Chris Sims or Tim Rattay, who are younger quarterbacks.
Right.
Guy like Garcia has been around the block. He's probably seen 15 or 20 different offensive systems and playbooks.
Not only that, but he's had more success than a guy like a Sims or a Rattay.
A lot more success.
You know, the guy's been to the Pro Bowl.
Absolutely. So, which is why I like it. I like it. I think the Patriots, if they're able to get him for nothing, they should sign him.
There's another school of thought, though, that I wanted to throw out there, though.
What was it?
Luke McCown
was the one I was thinking of.
So they would be secure and they would have three quarterbacks.
Yeah, they'd have three.
It'd be similar here. Like, they'd have a rookie, they'd have an established guy.
And they'd have
sort of a guy who's sort of in.
Right, exactly. I see nothing wrong with that. I mean, I think it makes way too much sense.
The other school of thought that I want to throw out there is we've seen flashes from O'Connell.
Yeah.
We've seen what he can do in college. We've seen him sparingly in the preseason. But he's built up a little bit of hype about himself with his play so far. If something were to happen to Castle this week, next week, whenever, whether Garcia's here or not, would it behoove the team, because they've picked him in the third round for a reason. He's going to be the future at some point.
Right. They think he will be.
Right. So is it worth it getting him in there in his rookie year to get even, if not a start, but maybe some playing time in these games?
Well, I guess it really depends on how much you value the games in this season. I mean, let's say, Eric, they lose, you know, two or three games here, and, you know, I don't know that we see a scenario like that, to be honest with you, because I don't think the Patriots will ever consider, because of the division that they're in, I don't think they're going to consider themselves out of it until the day that they're eliminated, which could be, what, the last week of the season.
I'm not even saying that for them being out of it. I'm saying, let's say Castle plays like he has recently.
And 18, in other words,
15 for 18, okay. 152 yards, maybe a touchdown,
all right.
Maybe two, maybe a pick here or there.
Right.
He may be winning by a field goal or a touchdown, but he's not setting the world on fire.
Okay.
They build up a little bit of a lead in the division, let's say. Do they say, hey, you know what? We need a spark. We need something more than this. Why don't we give the kid a chance?
Well, first of all, I think
if they think he can't do any worse than what Castle's doing.
Right. Well, to begin with, I think that if the Patriots are able to get that out of Matt Castle, you know, that type of performance. I mean, that's exactly what the team says they're asking of him this week. Mm-hmm. Did they not? I mean, they're saying, we just don't want him to make mistakes. We want him to guide the team. We want him to just be an efficient manager.
Be himself.
Not be Tom Brady. Yeah, he doesn't have to be a flashy, you know, wing it down the field kind of guy. All he has to do is be Matt Castle, because we've got pieces of the puzzle around him.
Mm-hmm.
So if he's able to do that, I don't see how they let O'Connell in there. Just because Castle's doing exactly what they asked him to do. The only way that I see O'Connell getting in this season is if, A, first of all, they got to say no to Jeff Garcia, and B, if Castle gets injured. That's it. That's the only way he gets in. It's his rookie year. Keep in mind now that the Patriots generally take rookies and chew them up and spit them out, if they keep them at all.
Mm-hmm.
And usually, I mean, how long has it taken Matt Castle now to give him, you know, his opportunity? This is his fourth year, and it happened because of injury. So I'm thinking that, you know, they're thinking, well, we like O'Connell. We like his, you know, ability. We think he can do some things here, but he needs some seasoning. So it's going to be a couple of years before they actually give him a chance, which is why, again, based on track record, going out and getting Jeff Garcia makes perfect sense. Mm-hmm. It takes all the pressure off of O'Connell. He can still continue to matriculate. There you go. There's the word for the day, matriculate.
Thank you, Jack.
You're welcome very much. But you can matriculate. You can learn. You've got a growth curve there that you can stay with, and you don't have to have it sped up. Mm-hmm. You know, you can rely on the veteran guy if you have to, and a guy like Garcia, who's only going to be around as a rental quarterback for the rest of this year anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I
agree with the Garcia move. I think if he's let go, I think they should try to get him for insurance purposes.
Well, that's the first question I want to ask everybody today then. Webradio@patriots.com. I don't know. Did you guys spend time on this in PFW?
I have the web reports this week, so okay. I was out at practice first hour. So
okay.
And then in the second hour we do.
They didn't mention. I didn't think so. That's fine. Which is why we're glad to have you here on Thursday.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that. Because it's you know, rare, you know, we're in here doing the show when the guys are out there in the field, and so it's kind of like, well, that's why I rely on, you know, you guys in particular to say, all right, what happened in practice today, which is one of the reasons why we decided to do it for this show this year.
Yep.
It also helps to have somebody to bounce things off of, so thank you for that.
You're welcome.
That's the first question I want to ask is, if Jeff Garcia is available, if the Buccaneers make him available, and that is, i.e., cut him outright or make him available for a very low draft pick, do the Patriots go and get him? Webradio@patriots.com. That's question number one today, all right, for everybody who's listening in. Number two, you got to predict the game on Sunday, all right, because traditionally inside Patriots playbook on Thursdays, we predict the score of the game. And we'll get into our thoughts here on the game a little bit, but I got to admit, as the week has progressed, Tuesday, in the aftermath of everything that happened with Tom Brady, I said here on the program, I thought the Patriots would go 2-1 in their first three games before the bye week, and I thought the most likely loss was this week as opposed to next week with Miami.
Okay.
All right. I have since done a 180-degree turn on that. You know, in talking to Mark Cannizzaro, who we did yesterday from the New York Post, in reading some things out of New York, in listening to the national media, in seeing some of the I don't want to say disrespect, but let's just say the lowering of expectations for this football team because of one player's absence.
Yep.
I will be surprised if the Patriots don't win.
I agree with you, and I think whether or not they had the respect or not, I think they were going to win this game anyway. Your gut was that they would probably go 2-1, and this would be the game that they would lose.
That was my initial instinct. Yeah. First thing when we signed on Tuesday.
I tell you what, during the offseason when the whole Favre soap opera was going on, I was a big proponent from the beginning. When he first retired, I said, you know what, he's not going to retire. He's going to come back, whether it's with Green Bay or somebody else. The problem is, I wanted him to go away because I didn't think he was that good. I think the last 5 years he has shown that he's lost a step. Last year was a fluke. And the fact that he had a decent year made him think, I'm good enough to still play. I should come back and play for someone. And when he signed with the Jets, everyone was thinking, oh, they're getting the Favre from 10 years ago, who was good and was going to the Super Bowl and leading his team to the playoffs all the time. I didn't think they were that much better with him than they would have been with Pennington, to be honest with you. So I looked at this game as I felt confident that the Patriots were going to go in and win this game, regardless of what happened with Favre coming in. So that's how I looked at it going in. Then the Brady injury happened last week.
Yeah.
And I said, you know what, this will be more exciting now because I think if Brady had played them, I really don't think it would have been close. This might make it a little bit closer, but I still think the Patriots are going to rally and win this game. And and if what you're saying is true with the lack of respect factor coming out around the country, that'll only just add to it because you know what this team does when they feel like they're not being respected. They
respond,
a lot better.
And that's why I felt stronger the way that I have this week, Eric, is because we've seen it happen in the Belichick era, especially, but with the veterans that they have on this football team, we've seen it time and time again. And I went into great detail yesterday and even on Tuesday talking about how this team loves to manufacture that chip on the shoulder to where it becomes a boulder on the shoulder. They did it last year with Spygate. They've done it the last couple of years because of disrespect, and this is a perfect opportunity to set up yet again us versus them.
Mm-hmm.
Us against the world.
Yeah.
Nobody thinks you're worth a crap because of one player, and right. yet you know they've got a team full of Pro Bowlers. If you go by what last year was, right?
Right.
So it just to me it plays right into the psychology. I mean, Bill Belichick has to be. This team has to be sad that they lost Tom Brady, no doubt. But at the same time, somebody in that locker room smiling a little bit because now they're saying, "Hey, I got just what I need. I got fuel for the fire. We know we have a good football team here."
Well, I brought this up in the last hour of the PFW show when I went out to practice. I know it's only been two practices this week
yeah.
with Castle. I know it's only going into week two. They are 1-0. Things are good right now. But I have not seen a change in the demeanor of any of the players on this team.
It's BAU, right? Business as usual.
It yeah. has been. Right. I mean, they're, you know, speaking with them in the locker room the last few days, they're all saying what you just said. Yeah, we're sorry Tom's not here. We're sorry. We hope he gets better soon. But we got a game to play. We're going to suit up at 4:15 this Sunday no matter what. We still have to play. We still feel like we're a good team. Ty Warren said after the game, there aren't many one-man teams in the NFL. You find me one and you show me. He said, you know, we're more than just one man on this team. So I think they're going into it with as casual an attitude as they normally do. I don't mean casual in the sense that they don't care. Mm-hmm. But, like, they're not down on themselves. They're not wallowing in self-pity. They're going about it as if nothing really happened. And I think that's the right approach to take. That gives Matt Castle more confidence as well, too, that he feels like everyone on the team has his back. So I'm looking forward to this.
I heard this morning on ESPN Radio, I was listening, and Mark Schlereth, who, actually, I most of the time respect because I think he's got some pretty good football ability, you know, former lineman for the Denver mm-hmm. Broncos. And
the Redskins. He was part of that
yeah,
Hogs
Redskins.
Team
he was part of the Hogs team of the Redskins, right. And a lot of people don't like what he has to say simply because they feel like, oh, man, here we go again. I don't want to cough in the microphone.
I think that they make it a sense that he's a little cheesy sometimes. Is that where you're going with that?
That's exactly right. And for a guy who does have football knowledge like he does, he said something this morning that really said to me, it's kind of like, I don't think he knows what he's talking about.
What did he say?
He said that we value the quarterback in this league so much, which I don't doubt. We do value the quarterback. But he said, because of Brady going down for the Patriots, he says, not only do I not think that the Patriots are not the favorite in the AFC, I don't think they're the favorite in their own division.
Well, I think, you know, there are some people who are trying to make that argument now because this is going to be a classic season, John, for all those people who have always said, is it Brady or is it Belichick? The wins that this team has gotten, it's the argument has always been how would the team do with or without one of those guys?
Gary's taking pity on me because now I've got the hey baby.
Barry White.
Show me a little bit of loving now. See, that's what happens. I get in a coughing fit and I start sounding like the voice of God.
There you go.
Bodes well for the revolution.
He's taking pity on you. We take shots at you.
I know. Take shots
at
me.
How it goes in the
studio. Bodes well for the fans tonight at the Revolution game here.
Oh, yeah.
I'll be a good
game.
Voice tonight, right?
Oh, that's right. No, so I think this will feed.
Oh, he just said, Gary just said, assuming somebody scores. Thank you very much.
That was in your ear only for a reason.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, you choked me up with laughter on that one, I know. And he's wearing his Revolution shirt, by the way.
He supports his Revs.
Yes, he does.
But anyways, we were saying before, I think this plays into the whole argument of, is it Brady or is it Belichick?
Mm-hmm.
You know, can this team win without Brady or could they win without Belichick? Now we're going to know. This season, we're going to find out if they can do it without one of them. And that one of them is Brady, obviously. So I lost track of what I was trying to.
We were talking about
the argument we were making before was
the Patriots being a one-man team.
Right.
Mark Schlereth mentioned that he thinks the Jets now are the favorite in the AFC East.
Right, because it's a one-man team.
Right.
And this will play into his argument because as the season goes on, if the Patriots don't win, then he can say it's a one-man team. They can't win without, you know, it wasn't Belichick. They can't win without Brady. If they do start winning, if they go 9-7, 10-6, win the division, make the playoffs, then people can say, well, that argument could be made, hey, maybe it was Belichick and not Brady. You can win with the system that he's got in place. So we're going to have to see if Schlereth knows what he's talking about or not, but I think he's just one of those people that falls into that argument on one side or the other.
I also think that sometimes those guys, and it happened to know this firsthand because I've been guilty of it myself from time to time, sometimes you make an argument just for the sake of argument. You may not necessarily believe it, but it's up to you to sell it. so you can create the debate on the air.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that he really believes that. It is true that a lot of people consider this to be, you know, a quarterback's league, but, I mean, what team out there right now in the NFL? Really? Maybe other than the Patriots. I'll allow that the Patriots might be one of those teams. What other team in the NFL would fall completely apart if they lost their quarterback?
The Indianapolis Colts.
You think that the Colts would fall
apart?
I
think they'd be in the same situation New England is in,
okay.
Except I would have no faith in Jim Sorgi running that team, would you?
I'd have more faith. I mean, if you look at it on paper, why would you not have more faith in Sorgi than Castle?
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's about the same thing.
I would think that the Colts would be fine. Sorgi's certainly capable. He's been there forever. He knows the system. He's capable. He's played way more than a guy like Castle has. I mean, does he have the same, you know, Peyton Manning qualities? No, nobody does. That's why he's Peyton Manning. But, you know, could the Colts still win? Sure. I think you're exactly right. I think the Colts would be in the same shape as the Patriots. They go from a team that's probably 13-3 down to 10-6. You know, I would say that that's probably would be realistic. But at the same time, that still puts them in the playoff hunt. They don't go from being a playoff contender to a non-playoff team with the absence of one player. The team is built up around them too much.
It would make the AFC South a lot more competitive.
Oh, that would be a hell of a division, wouldn't it?
Well,
I think it is now.
Without
Manning, ugh.
You know, the argument about that Schlereth made about this being a quarterback league, it's kind of ironic that he says that because there are so few star quarterbacks. I couldn't name 10 great quarterbacks in this league.
I don't think so either.
I think I could name maybe three, maybe four. Brady, Manning, Romo has to be considered up
You'd
there.
You'd have to put Romo in there just because what he's got built up around him in Dallas.
Yes.
See, now, can you think of a quarterback that stands out that doesn't have a lot around him?
Not really.
No. The only one that comes to mind would be Donovan McNabb, and yet we don't really know yet what Philadelphia has around him, although what we saw week one
Ryan
was pretty
Westbrook
good.
Is pretty good.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know that they have the star power that certainly the Cowboys do or the Colts or the Patriots do. I'm just saying that's the only one that comes to mind, and even that's a stretch. I mean, honestly, who else?
Yeah, I can't. I mean, it's hard to come up with one.
You can't, which is why it doesn't exist. So
his argument that it's a quarterback-driven league, I see what his point is, that you rely offenses rely on their quarterback for everything, and teams rely on their quarterback because, you know, an offense can look dramatically different with one quarterback or another, but there aren't that many great quarterbacks.
No, you can say that about any league. I mean, you can say that about college football. It's a quarterback-driven college game. Well, of course it is, because the quarterbacks are the ones that make the offenses go. I mean, that was just sort of a silly thing for a guy with his experience and expertise to say. I didn't buy it. And I think what it was, he was just trying to make an argument for injecting some enthusiasm into a perceived now battle for bragging rights in the AFC East. You know, the Patriots don't need Tom Brady to go down for the Jets to be competitive. The Patriots played a close game with the Jets last year when the Patriots went 16-0. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's going to be a close game anyway. Do I think the Patriots will blow them out? No way. No, I don't. But do I think the Patriots have enough to get over the hump? If all things are equal, and by that I mean if they don't, you know, turn the ball over in the red zone, you know, or they don't throw, you know, a pick six or something like that, if they don't give the points to the Jets, if all things are equal, yes, they should win the game.
Mm-hmm. No, I really want to go back to what you said earlier about the team rallying around this.
Yeah.
You know, last year it was the incident with the Jets.
Right.
After the Jets game that everyone sort of rallied around that on this team. This team really does well when it has a rallying point. And I think they have their rallying point. You're right, John. With Castle coming in now and people taking it started after the game this Sunday in the locker room when the players were talking with the media. Some of them were saying, you know, hey, you know, that Castle, he played pretty well out there for a guy that all you guys wanted cut.
Right.
You know, those were the type of comments we were getting from players. Like, they were almost saying, you know, hey, sticking it to us being the media, not us maybe, you know, personally. But as a group, the media took a lot of shots at Castle this summer, and sometimes unjustly so. And he stood up and defended himself for it. Brady stood up and defended Castle for it. But I think this team is going to surprise people. Not just this week, but I think throughout the season.
I'm tempted to kind of go along with you. I don't want to jump overboard here because I think we all need to realize that you have to kind of contain your enthusiasm somewhat, and it's kind of tough to be terribly enthusiastic about this team in light of what's happened. But, you know, at the same time, I made this analogy yesterday. I said, you know, I had friends of mine writing in from out of state sending me emails saying, oh, wow, tough time, you know, for the Patriots. Oh, I guess the season's over 1 week in and all this kind of. I'm like, what are you talking about? If you actually knew what you're talking about, then there's no way that you'd be saying that. But the pervading feeling is that they're done. Stick a fork in them. Mm-hmm. Week one out of 16 or 17 now, and it's over. And I just, I'm like, you know, that's going to feed and play right into what these guys are masterminds at doing.
Well, it's funny you say that. Yesterday on the show, we were sort of talking about fan reaction and their mood about it. Now, we've been getting a lot of emails from our audience for the newspaper saying, and I was a little surprised at this, that they weren't necessarily saying that the sky is falling.
Right.
That they were looking at it sort of as, hey, you know, in 01 when Bledsoe went down, we kind of said, hey, the season's over. They're not going to win another game. Who's this Brady kid? And it wasn't necessarily as good a team then as they have around Castle today.
Right.
Better defense, certainly better wide receivers, better running game. Offensive line is a lot better. If there's a perfect scenario for a quarterback to come in and fill in, this is a pretty good one to be in. He's got a supporting cast around him that can help him, that he doesn't feel like he has to be the entire team.
I totally agree with you.
So
right?
I think from the response we're getting from our readers, our PFW readers, a lot of them aren't as ready to jump off the cliff as maybe some other people are.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess that's encouraging then, and maybe that's because these people, you know, PFW readers, listeners to these programs here on Patriots.com radio and such, we consider these fans diehard fans.
Oh, absolutely.
Why else would they be tuning in, right?
Yeah.
So you'd think that most of them, the overwhelming majority of them would, you know.
Anybody that wants to read what we're writing has to be a diehard fan.
they believe it. That's right. They absolutely do. John Rook and Eric Scalavino from, or illiterate, one or the other. John Rook and Eric Scalavino from PFW here with you inside the playbook on a Thursday. In about 10 minutes, Russell Baxter, the ESPN research analyst for, NFL research analyst for ESPN, will join us in the program as he's done the last several years on Thursdays to not only look at the Patriots' upcoming game, but to take a look at the games around the NFL for this weekend. So we'll have Russell coming up from Bristol, Connecticut, and the Worldwide Leaders headquarters in about 10 minutes. In the meantime, webradio@patriots.com. That's the email address. We're looking for two things. Number one, if Jeff Garcia is available, and there are media reports out of Tampa that say he may be, maybe as soon as tomorrow, that if the Bucs may decide to just cut him if they don't try to trade him first. But if he becomes available, do you swing a deal or do you just pick him up if he is on the waiver wire? Do you pick him up if you're the Patriots? That's number one. Number two, what's the score for Sunday? Webradio@patriots.com. Our score, not the other score. Our score. This is the score that matters. Let's hit a couple of emails from earlier that we didn't get to. Caleb in Tampa says, guys, as all of this is happening, it reminds me of the quote from Oliver Goldsmith, "Our greatest glory consists not in never falling, but in rising after every fall." Okay, I like that. "Now it's Castle's turn to prove why Mr. Bill kept him around for so long and never cut him. I have faith in Bill and the rest of the team, and I think that they will pull together through this and prove that they are not overrated, not a bunch of people who can't win without cheating, and not a team that just depends on one player. I'm still on the embrace the hate in 08 train." So there you go. Maybe that's more the mainstream than just the...
You know, I had predicted in last week's season preview of PFW a 14-2 season for the Pats. Do I see him doing that? I think that's way too much to expect. Do I see them winning 10, maybe 11 games, winning the division, getting in the playoffs? I think it's still possible.
General 11 is still the number I'm looking at, too.
I think it's still possible.
Ethan in Delaware says, "Just read a report on Pro Football Talk," and this is where I also saw it as well initially, "that the Bucs want to get rid of Garcia. I know we're rallying around Castle right now, but Garcia has led his last two teams to the playoffs for the past 2 years. Would you give up a fourth-round pick to improve your chances of winning?"
I'd do that. I'd make that trade.
You'd give up a fourth-round pick?
I'd rather do a conditional pick, but I think four is okay.
I'm not sure I'm willing to go fourth. I mean, I'll be honest. Okay, what kind of a value is a fourth-round pick anyway? Conditional pick, I would say yes to. Pick him up on the waiver wire, absolutely, no-brainer, slam dunk. What else can you lose, right?
Yeah.
A fourth-round pick, a dyed-in-the-wool fourth-round pick? I would hesitate. I'd probably still pull the trigger, Eric, but I would at least hesitate.
It's a second-day pick,
yeah,
which is why, if it were a third or a second,
I don't think so. I wouldn't do a first-day pick.
No, but a second-day pick, even a fourth round, yeah. I mean, this year's fourth-rounder, Jonathan Wilhite, made the team. That was a matter of just the attrition to that position helped him win that spot. I don't know if he would have won that if one or two other guys were here.
Here's a guy, though, that you would think would be sufficiently motivated to show the Bucks what they're missing, right? He's a veteran, right? He's won before. Mm-hmm. He wants to win again. He knows he's nearing the end of his career. He's got an opportunity here to win a ring on his way out the door, given the right set of circumstances.
Yeah, it makes sense for him, too.
I mean, it makes unbelievable sense.
He's got to
be
saying,
he's going to be telling his agent now, make it happen!
Yeah, or cut me. Yeah, one
please
or the other.
Cut me.
Yeah.
You know, cut me, Mick. Cut me. This one, guys, from Dana in Brighton, England. Why don't all quarterbacks wear a knee brace on their plant leg? All the QB knee injuries seem to be to the plant leg as they step up in the pocket. It happened to Brady, Carson, many others. It happened to me in 06. I stepped up to throw the ball. Someone took my left knee out, and since then I've been wearing the brace as protection. The brace doesn't ruin any of your mechanics or mobility. It just seems to me that a lot of these injuries could be prevented. You know, I spent a little time on this one yesterday as well, Dana. I largely believe that the majority of quarterbacks don't wear it as a precaution because they feel like it hinders their mobility, even if it doesn't. Eric's pointing to his dome, okay? It is between the ears, okay? It's all between the ears.
Psychological thing.
It's a psychological thing. If they have this brace on their
knee.
They
feel like it's an encumbrance that they don't need.
Exactly. I think they're going to have to get over it because, frankly, I'm not sure how much putting that brace on his knee would have helped. Would it have saved one of the ligaments? Maybe. Would it have turned it from a tear to a sprain? Maybe.
Yeah, who knows?
You don't really know that. Yeah. You just don't really know that. And would it have helped him at all? I mean, who knows?
Yeah, 20/20 hindsight in this case, I think it's a fruitless effort to try to do that.
You know, the fact is that football is a violent sport. Let's break out the John Facenda again.
Yeah,
let's break him out again. You know, it's something that stuff happens.
And look, the other thing we got to realize, too.
So we bring out Barry White again rather than John Facenda?
You know, we have gotten a little spoiled here in New England, too.
All righty, Gary.
The longevity that Brady has had at his position, and he's taken some hits over the years, John. I'm surprised this hasn't happened sooner, to be honest with you. He's taken some monster hits and gotten up off the turf.
He has.
And I've said, how is he getting up from this?
He took, I believe, last year, even with three Pro Bowl linemen, I think the count was, I read this, and I don't remember where I read this, because I'd like to go back to it and print it out for referral. But I believe they said Brady took 80-some-odd hits last year, which was...
And a hit is considered any time an opposing player touches the quarterback.
Yes.
It doesn't necessarily have to be a violent hit.
No, it's a hit. But with three Pro Bowl linemen, Brady took over 80 hits last year.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact is that he's still standing after those hits, and some of them were of the violent variety, and he bounced back up. It's a miracle. You're right. It hasn't happened earlier.
And, you know, they're playing a guy this weekend, Favre, who holds the record for consecutive starts in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
That's a miracle in itself, too, especially the way Favre plays. You know, he's not a guy that'll just stand in the pocket. I mean, he will stand in the pocket if he has to, but he's been reckless with his body over the years, and it's a miracle that he comes back week after week. Same thing with Peyton Manning. You know, he just barely made playing that game last week. He missed the whole preseason. We get a little spoiled because so many quarterbacks get injured all the time.
Right.
And we've had success with Brady that I wonder if, you know, people are taking that into consideration, at least.
Chris in Raleigh, North Carolina says, we've been over what Castle's many shortcomings are, but I'm curious what you think his positives are. To me, it seems the biggest thing he has working in his favor is the consistent situation he's been in. Most first-rounders are thrust into bad situations and end up learning multiple playbooks rather than how to play quarterback in the NFL. Castle has had the same system, consistent coaching, and quality personnel around him as the backup. While I think the player coaching players stuff is overrated, he has to have picked up plenty by being around the best in the game.
Well, yeah, that's true. As far as physical positives, we talked a little bit about this on the last show. I think his ability to scramble when necessary, not just for the heck of it, but when the pocket actually breaks down and he needs to run for it, like he did a little bit the other day against Kansas City, I think he has that little bit of an edge over Brady. I think that's a positive. He's a little bit more athletic.
I would agree with you. He's more athletic and more mobile than Brady. Yes, absolutely.
I'm certainly not prepared to say he's a better passer or at least even a comparable passer or anything like that. But in that particular case, I think his athleticism wins out. I mean, we hope he doesn't have to scramble to get yards. That means the pocket broke down, and that means he's running for his life.
Right.
But if you want to look for a positive on the physical side, that's what I would go with.
By the way, Chris says, I think we're an 8-8 team now, but I'm eager to see how Castle develops.
Well,
I wonder what Chris thought the team was before Brady went down. You know?
Yeah.
Interesting.
I I want to give them more credit than that. You know, like you said, this isn't a one-man team. And I know people were, even a couple of weeks ago, ready to cut Castle loose and have Gutierrez be the backup.
Right. I was one of those.
Well, you know, and
although I didn't say Gutierrez would be the backup, I thought that O'Connell would be the backup.
And but Gutierrez would be the third
yes,
man, and,
yes,
and Castle
did.
Would be the odd man out.
I did. Yeah.
Yeah. We kind of predicted that on PFW as well. We had a vote on it, and it was close. It was 3-2, but we ended up saying that Gutierrez would win that battle. But you know, obviously they see something in Castle that very few other people did. So you have to give them that. You have to give him the benefit of the doubt.
And you have to give Castle benefit of the doubt on what he did last week.
The other thing I'm interested in with Castle is we've only ever seen him, for the most part, either in preseason with the twos or sometimes with the ones. But but in preseason, it's hard to gauge how hard the ones are playing.
Right.
The guys who know they're going to be ones, not the guys who are fighting to be a one.
Right.
And we've seen him a little bit in spot duty, you know, last year against the Redskins, his rookie year against Miami, where he came in mop-up duty. He played well in that Miami game. He almost led them to a victory,
mm-hmm.
come-from-behind victory.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he had there was a terrible Washington team last year. But I'm interested in seeing Castle in a game that matters with the ones for the entire game. We've never seen that.
That's true.
We're going to see that.
We're going to see it Sunday.
And, you know, the kid almost beat out Matt Leinart at USC. It was close. It was neck and neck for that job. Leinart won the job, and he ended up becoming the Heisman Trophy winner. But he was good enough to go neck and neck with him until the last minute. And then Carroll said, I'm going with Leinart. So the kid has talent. The kid can play. He also played behind Carson Palmer. You know, that's been talked about, you know, enough times. So the kid can do it. I want to see him do it with the players that Brady had. And I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. I think he deserves that.
All right. Well, Walter from Boston says, speaking of giving benefit of the doubt here, he says, if Castle throws three picks and gets sacked, does O'Connell go in the game?
Well, that's the other thing, too, that we haven't brought up. If Castle's not playing well, but the team still thinks, the coaches still think that the team has a chance to compete, that could be a scenario where we see O'Connell if they say, hey, you know what, the rookie gives us a better chance to win. Because Bill's thing is always, we're going to do what's best for the football team. That's his mantra. So if he feels at some point, if Castle's not playing well and they don't have Garcia,
mm-hmm.
and all they have right now, because Gutierrez is on the practice squad, he's not on the active roster. So as of right now, they only have two quarterbacks going into this week. And if Castle's not playing well and they feel like the rookie gives them a better chance, I wouldn't be surprised.
Alex from New Jersey. What do you think about Garcia coming over to the Pats if the Bucs cut him loose? It would be a great addition, have a vet behind Castle, and if Castle doesn't produce as expected, let's go with Garcia after the bye. Well, we've talked a little bit about Alex. I don't know that you'd go with Garcia after the bye, but again, Eric and I both like, if you're able to get him for nothing or next to nothing, I think you should take a shot at it.
Might as well.
You know,
it's nothing.
You're still trying to win a championship here.
Absolutely.
You still feel like you have all the pieces of the puzzle in place, maybe now with the exception of quarterback. I'll allow for that.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, though, you know, if by some chance you come up a little short with what you currently have at quarterback, why wouldn't you do something to potentially strengthen? It's certainly not going to make you worse.
Mm-hmm. And look, as we saw last year, a team that barely made the playoffs ended up winning the Super Bowl.
Right.
All you need to do is get to the playoffs. Anything else can happen after that. If Castle can get this team to the playoffs,
sure.
It's anybody's game, no matter who's in it on the AFC or
that's
the
why,
NFC.
And that's why you always hear the guys say it, and you hear the coaches say it, and you're going, yeah, right, no big deal. And then we treat each week as it's Armageddon, you know, during the course of, mm-hmm. you know, 16 weeks of actually playing games. But it is truth. It's one game at a time. You deal with it one at a time, and the whole goal here is to get into the postseason. And that's what they say in the locker room. It's what the coaches say. It's what people who know try to repeat, and yet nobody wants to listen. But that is exactly it. You get into the postseason, then everybody's 0-0. It's square one. May the best team win.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, and they have as good a shot as anybody right now,
sure.
I think, still of getting in there.
I would think so. I would think so. Sam from Brighton says, Patriots 24, Jets 21. He says Moss catches a couple of TDs. He gives Lamont Jordan a touchdown against his former team.
Mm-hmm.
And he says Lawrence Maroney's going to go for 100 yards. He also says Favre is going to throw four picks.
I could definitely see Favre throwing four picks, especially the way he played last. That touchdown, did you see that touchdown that came on fourth down, John, in that Miami Jets game?
Yes.
They couldn't go for the field goal in obvious field goal territory because Mike Nugent hurt his calf or his thigh or something.
Right.
And he couldn't kick. So they went for it on fourth down. The pocket broke down on Favre. He started scrambling around. He was going to get hit in the face. He heaved up the ball, and he just happened to heave it in the right spot. There was
right.
a receiver in between.
It was a wounded, duck is what it was.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, that's the kind of thing.
That he does all the time.
He does all the time. He was lucky to get it completed in that game because it's the Dolphins. I don't see
if you throw some of those, you know, wounded ducks against the Pats,
that's
it's going to be
point.
Up to the Patriots to take advantage and right. make sure they don't blow the opportunity.
Right. And that's the thing that a lot of the players were talking about this week in the locker room. The defensive players were saying the key to trying to contain Favre is not to is to resist the temptation to go after him when he starts running out of the pocket and things start breaking down.
Yeah.
Stick with your coverage. Stick with your assignment. And don't worry about what the quarterback is doing. That's somebody else's assignment. You worry about the receiver or the back out of the backfield or the
tight end. Stay in your lane. Stay in your assignment.
Right.
You know, if you do that,
it's tempting.
You're going to have – yeah, I can understand that. But if you stay in your lane, stay in your assignment, you're going to have more success perhaps in the long haul against mm-hmm. Favre than not.
Right.
Just because Favre's mobility and Favre's ability to get out of the pocket is a scary thing at times.
The other matchup I'm really interested in this weekend, John, is – the Jets paid a lot of money in this offseason to build up their offensive line.
Mm-hmm.
They signed former Patriot Damian Woody.
Right.
They shifted him over to tackle.
Right.
And they also signed guard Alan Faneca from Pittsburgh.
Right.
Threw a heck of a lot of money at that guy for a guard.
Sure did.
And the Patriots front seven, particularly the front three, Seymour has talked all offseason about how, you know, the last 2 years he's been playing on one leg, basically. This year he's ready to step up to the level that he played at a couple of years ago. I want to see this Patriots defensive line against the Jets offensive line, and I want them to be in Favre's face all day. I want to see them play, they need to rush Favre.
They're going to have to put pressure
they
on
need to, We've
right.
been saying it, and with Thomas on the outside at linebacker and Vrabel on the other side, Mayo is the real deal in the middle. We've seen that
mm-hmm.
early
mm-hmm.
from him. That gives Thomas and Vrabel the chance to do what they do best, which is rush from the outside.
Vrabel had 2 sacks last week.
Right. Picking up off of 12.5 last year,
yeah.
I think it was the best season of his career.
As
far as stats go.
And here's a guy that says he wants to retire.
He's playing the best football of his career.
Well, at least statistically.
It helps that he's in the spot where he can make those plays.
Right.
And you've got Thomas on the other side. If Seymour's back to the level that he says that he wants to be, health-wise and performance-wise, Will Fork is a beast in the middle. Ty Warren is still as good as any defensive lineman that's not a Pro Bowler. In this league, I really think they can have an advantage over this Jets offensive line, and I think that is going to be a key. If Hobbs and the new guys in the secondary do stick with their assignments and resist the urge to try to peek into the backfield and see what Favre's doing, let the rush guys take care of Favre, and their job in the defensive backfield is going to be easier.
All right. Give me a score then for Sunday. What do you think?
I say Patriots 23, Jets 13, and I say Castle throws 2 touchdowns.
Wow. 23-13.
Yep, and I say Favre throws at least 2 picks.
Okay, all right. I'm going to save mine to the end of the show, but, you know, we'll save it anyway. All right, let's take a timeout here. Eric, thank you very much. Greatly appreciated today.
No problem. Have fun.
Eric Scalavino from PFW.
He'll see you next Thursday.
Join us here on Thursdays as part of the program. Timeout here on the other side. Russell Baxter from ESPN, NFL Research Coordinator, joined us to look at the Pats and Jets and the rest of Week 2 around the National Football League. Coming up here inside the playbook.
When you got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down Franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down Franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine and Associate Grocers of New England and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
Hey, this is Hall of Famer John Hanna here. Let me tell you about the game with the greats. Have you ever wondered what former football players talk about when we're watching a game? Well, now you can find out for yourself at the Game with the Greats on October 5th at Gillette Stadium. Watch the Patriots take on the 49ers in the Fidelity Investments Clubhouse, along with me and a bunch of other Patriot alumni. Guys like newly inducted Hall of Famer Andre Tippett and Patriots Hall of Famers Ben Coates, Stanley Morgan, Steve Nelson, and Steve Grogan will be there. Tickets are limited because they're only $40. Visit the Patriots.com homepage and click on Alumni for more information. We're all going to be at the game with the greats. Where will you be?
Patriot Place, New England's first and only super regional lifestyle and entertainment center, is now open right next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Massachusetts. The home of the New England Patriots and the New England Revolution is now the home of New England's most exciting entertainment and shopping destination, featuring Circuit City, Bed Bath & Beyond, Christmas tree shops, Off-Broadway shoes, Staples, and New England's first Bass Pro Shops. Patriot Place has something for your shopping needs. And coming soon to Patriot Place is the first CBS Scene restaurant and bar, a four-star hotel, showcase live entertainment venue, and the long-awaited hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. Patriot Place will soon be the home to more than 70 shopping, entertainment, and dining experiences unlike any other in New England. Visit patriot-place.com for more information, and enter the grand opening sweepstakes for the opportunity to win a $10,000 Visa gift card for a Patriot Place shopping spree. A once-in-a-lifetime experience every day. At Patriot Place, everyone wins.
Taylor on the turn, takes a touch, and buries it! 1-0 Reds! The sellout crowd in Foxborough rises to their feet. The Reds have the lead. Taylor Twellman just made 30,000 plus here at Gillette Stadium. Very happy.
2008 New England Revolution gear is here at the Revolution Pro Shop at Patriot Place. Located right next to Gillette Stadium, the Revolution Pro Shop has all of the official Revolution merchandise you'll ever need. Get the new 2008 home and away jerseys with name and number of your favorite player, or have one customized with your own name and number. Jackets, sweatshirts, hats, tees, and much more. With a huge selection of Revolution items for men, women, kids, and infants, the Revolution Pro Shop has something for everyone. The Revolution Pro Shop at Patriot Place is open 7 days a week and always available online at www.revolutionsoccer.net. Get the gear your favorite player wears on the field at the Revolution Pro Shop.
16 candles make a lovely light.
Okay, somebody's probably wondering, what the hell does this mean? But I will tell you that if you have not listened to this program before in previous seasons, we always use some kind of a theme song that has to do with numbers to introduce Mr. Numbers himself. NFL research coordinator at ESPN, Russell S. Baxter. Russell, good to talk to you, my friend.
Well, you're only a week late on my birthday.
That's right. It was last week. Happy belated birthday.
Thank you. And you're only, let's see, you're only 33 years off.
We're 33 years off.
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
well, you and I
already began the official countdown, John, for the big 5-0.
You and I are the same age.
There we go.
We talked about this before. That's right.
My wife, God bless her, next year is determined to make it a Hawaii 5-0.
Really?
Yes.
Now
I know what she wants to do for my 50th birthday.
Well, but you don't want to do that for your 50th?
Well, in February, yes. I don't think I'll be going anywhere in September.
Well, but you get to go to the Pro Bowl anyway, don't you?
We used to.
Used to.
Yeah.
Not anymore?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's gone to other networks now. So.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I keep forgetting. So, okay.
Lamented hard by us folks at ESPN, I can tell you that.
Yeah,
you
that's right.
You know, when you can have a day where you
I forgot.
Get up at 7.
Yeah.
And you're finished by 3. Because it's 8:00 back Eastern.
I know.
And then you kind of really slug it out the rest of the day to find something to do.
Nothing wrong with that day.
Nothing at all. For those of my brethren who complain about doing anything, stop.
Which is everybody.
Which is everybody. Not the worst gig in the world. So how you been?
I'm good. I'm really good. How's everybody at home? Pardon us, by the way, for getting out the pleasantries, because Russell, you know, Russell's got his nose to the grindstone. I've been trying to explain to people, all right, Russell Baxter, now, what does he do? Who is he? What does he do? Is he on the above? And I said, no, you don't understand. Russell is the only person at ESPN whose sole job is 365 days a year, the National Football League.
Yes, yeah, I know it's kind of an envious position to put in, and those people who are lining up to take that from me, tough noogies. That won't be happening anytime soon.
I agree.
But I get to do something I love, and I get to do it year-round. You know, for me, football season goes 8 months. I go right in from this into the NFL draft, and then, you know, work on NFL Live during the off-season, and it's a project of joy around here, and the emphasis that ESPN has put on the National Football League is certainly not hurt my cause whatsoever. And we are 1 week old. and it is already an incredibly interesting season. Unfortunately, John, maybe for the wrong reason.
Yeah, so. I was about to say, I mean, interesting season. That's probably putting it kind of mildly. I mean, honestly, you know, injuries have an impact on games, on teams every season. I mean, that's just part of the game. I think it's the nature of the sport. But to have some of the injuries that we've had this early, and more specifically, to have Tom Brady, your reigning NFL MVP, go down with a season-ending knee injury in week one, it's almost unprecedented. So change things a little.
You know, I said to, you know, here's my shameless plug for Gary, yep. since he does my music group, but I just said to Gary, since you and I last spoke,
right.
Your team lost a football game, which hadn't, the whole time we were on the air.
That's right.
And lost a quarterback.
Right.
And even to a bigger picture, I'm going to throw something out to you here, John. Let's go back to 2 weeks before the Super Bowl when we had the NFL Final Four.
Yep, right.
And a quick pop quiz, you know, just throw out the four teams that were in that Final Four for me, if you would, please.
In the Final Four last year?
Yeah.
All right, you had the Patriots.
Right.
And you had the Chargers. That's right. I was about to say. Oh, God. And then on the other side, you had the Giants and you had the Packers.
Correct. And what has changed since then? Think about this. Since those weekends, Tom Brady is out for the season.
Right.
Sean Merriman is out for the season.
Right.
Brett Favre is now a New York Jet.
Right.
And the Giants no longer have, for either reasons of retirement or injury, Michael Strahan and Ozzie Umenyiora.
Correct.
So that's your Final Four from last year.
Each of those teams has been affected fairly significantly.
And you wonder why the league, for various reasons, I'm not saying, you know, be it injury, be it all, the reason for this league being hard to repeat. Okay? Because this is not new to this year.
Right.
I mean, the idea that we lost the MVP that early, we probably haven't seen anything like that since Terrell Davis went down about four games into the season in 1999. I'm talking about the league MVP going down that early in mm-hmm, the year.
Mm-hmm.
Injuries are a part of it every year. But to lose that kind of star power and prominent players among powerful teams, you know, you're talking about the Super Bowl teams and the two runner-ups. And again, Brett Favre, that's a whole different boat. But the fact remains he's no longer with the Green Bay Packers. And either Michael Strahan is no longer with the New York Giants. So you just think about all those components on that Sunday championship Sunday and the roles they played in getting their teams either to the Super Bowl or just missing the Super Bowl. And that's a lot of prominent play. Now, you know, the Packers' loss in a degree is the Jets' gain. I understand all that. But the ever-changing landscape of the NFL
mm-hmm.
is what makes this game so fascinating. And some of that landscape this week, again, changed for the wrong reasons. You know, Tom suffering the knee injury and, you know, Sean Merriman giving it the old college try, but when it was all said and done, he's probably taken the smart route to preserve
right.
his, you know, career
sure.
and as a human being as well. And, of course, Umenyiora, who was lost during the preseason. And in the third preseason game, I may point out, not the second preseason game when I know we're talking about playing too many preseason games these mm-hmm. days, and I'm sure you and I are going to touch on that in a few minutes.
Yep.
It's just interesting to note that there's your Final Four, and you wonder why that Final Four changes a lot year to year. And then on the same token, that's why you admire the New England Patriots and the Indianapolis Colts, who have won the division title 5 years in a row in this day and age.
Right.
And the Seattle Seahawks, who are there's no team right now racked with more injuries than Seattle, who won their division 4 years in a row. The teams that are consistent, who get in every year, or almost every year, the Eagles to a degree, the Steelers to a degree, the franchises that, you know, are year in and year out contenders. And you have to admire them in this day and age.
You hit on a very good point, which is why exactly I'm having a hard time understanding some of the naysayers. And I heard Schlereth do this morning on ESPN Radio with Mike and Mike. He was saying that he thinks now that the Jets should be considered a favorite in the AFC East. And I'm
kind of interesting because let me do a quick statistical math here. We already mentioned that the Patriots have won the division 5 years in a row.
Yep, yeah, yep. Yeah.
When was the last time the Jets beat the Patriots at home?
Well, the Patriots have won 11 straight.
Well, they've won 7 straight at the Meadowlands.
7 straight at the Meadowlands,
right.
too, right.
I mean, Tom Brady yeah. has a better record at the Meadowlands than the Jets or the Giants.
Right.
He's 8-0 there if you include the game at the end of the year last year. I believe the Jets have lost 10 of 11 overall to the New England Patriots.
Right.
It's like, you know, in a different sense, and they're going to play each other this week, Cleveland in position to upstart, you know, take over Pittsburgh's spot in the AFC North.
Yeah.
The Browns have lost 9 in a row and 15 and 16 to the Steelers.
Right.
Before you worry about winning the division, you might want to worry about actually defeating the team. And to throw that out, one more thing, before you start making the Jets the favorite, let's consider they were swept last year by the Buffalo Bills.
Right.
So the Buffalo Bills might have something to say.
Right.
When it's all said and done, I am a huge champion and tilt the throne. Be it your division, or be it your conference, or be it the overall thing. So until I see anyone mathematically, you know, it's like giving the football to Kenny Stabler, Roger Staubach, or John Elway in the final 2 minutes, or Tom Brady. When I see three zeros on the scoreboard, then I'll be convinced. Then it's over.
Right. Yeah. How soon we forget? It was just a couple of years ago when the Jets won last. Right.
Yeah. When they went up there, and then of course they lost in the playoffs.
Right.
Up in Foxborough, but 10 of 11.
10 of 11. That's right.
10 of 11 overall, including the playoffs, but
seven in a row at the Meadowlands. Right.
Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, before you anoint the favorite, how about just, you know, but that's what makes this interesting. One of these teams that, you know, all these teams who lost last week. I mean, if you think about the big three in the AFC, John, Indianapolis lost to Chicago. San Diego lost at home. San Diego and Indianapolis lost at home to Carolina and Chicago, who actually play each other this week.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. New England lost their quarterback. You know, things change. The thing about the NFL, it's not 16 games, it's 5 months. Things change very quickly. You never know what's going to happen. I mean, we got four new starting quarterbacks this week because of injuries. Okay, Vince Young is out in Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
Jeff Garcia is out in Tampa Bay, although that might be more than just wounded ankle. And, of course, Brody Croyle out, and, you know, Damon Hewitt will start against the Raiders for Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
So we're 1 week in, and one-eighth of the starting quarterbacks have gone down. So, you know, take care of yourself and worry about who's favored, who's on, win as many games as possible, get into the playoffs, and then take your chances there. But I'm a big champions and tilt the throne person. New England, last time I checked there, you might have a few other players on the roster.
Yeah, that's what we have been trying to remind people here, I think, all week long, especially those that are panicking.
Well, I mean, I understand to a degree the essence of panic, okay? It's not like, you see, you don't want to say a particular player, okay, because you don't want to demean anybody. But it's not like, I can't even say Joe Smith. Is Joe Smith playing for the Patriots these days? It's not like blah, 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 fill in the blank, went down.
Mm-hmm.
You are talking about a quarterback who came off one of the most productive seasons in NFL history last year.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of touchdown passes, he threw 50. In terms of yards, 4,806, third most in NFL history. He only threw 8 interceptions. The team went 16-0. So this isn't your normal circumstance that we're talking about here. It just isn't.
But
so I understand this sense of panic, and for most were a large degree of New England Patriots fans who, you know, once Tom Brady started in week 3 of 2001 against the Indianapolis Colts taking over for Drew Bledsoe, they've not known another quarterback because he hasn't missed a start. If you include the playoffs, 128 straight games, 111 regular season. So, to me, it's the equivalent of, you go back to 1999, John,
mm-hmm.
when the San Francisco 49ers had an awful season. They hadn't had an awful season like that in close to 20 years. It's almost like a generation or so doesn't know the New England Patriots without Tom Brady, just like the more than a generation of Packer fans who don't know the Packers without Brett Favre.
Right, right. Okay, well, I, you know, that's part of the
reason. Do you think that's sedated everybody a little, or?
No, I don't think so.
I didn't think so, but I thought I'd get it out. So.
No, I'm actually, it's causing me to stop and think a little bit, which is what I like about my conversations with you. You always cause me to, like, I never thought of it that way.
Oh my God, could you call my wife and tell her that? I mean,
see, no, I'm not going to help you there, brother, because I got my own battles to fight. Trust me on that one.
It's you know what it is? It's the facts and reality.
Yeah.
I mean, those are the facts of the matter and stuff, and you know, it's just like when we start anointing teams who's the best team in the league after week one or week two. You know, this league has proved now 3 years in a row that just getting into the playoffs is the key. Remember, Pittsburgh Steelers were a 6 seed and won the Super Bowl.
Right.
The Indianapolis Colts were a 3 seed and won the Super Bowl.
What were the Giants?
The Giants were a 5 in the NFC.
And they won the Super Bowl.
And they won the Super Bowl. The last three teams to win the Super Bowl, two of them wild cards, and two of them who won 3 straight road games and then won a Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Took 20 games, not 19. They all took the long route.
Right.
So it's, you know, I'm not ready to put Dallas and George Mason into the Super Bowl, but this league, in a sense, has become the NCAA tournament. You know, if you get in, you got a chance to win.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Okay, let's we'll come back to the Pats and the Jets then a little bit, but I did want to take a look at a couple of the other games this week, as we have been wont to do over the last few years, Russell. At least some intriguing matchups. There's a bunch this week, so you know we'll kind of pick and choose our
sure.
players in here. But first and foremost, I wanted to look with the AFC and Indianapolis playing at Minnesota. Both teams being 0-1, the Colts, of course, stumbling poorly, I might add, against the Chicago Bears. Minnesota also threw up a kind of a stinker for a team that was expected to do better. Is this already a battle of survival in week two?
Well, in a sense, it may be. You know, I don't want to say 0-2 and you're in a big hole, because you have to go all the way back to, let me think, last year, the 0-2 team won the Super Bowl.
Yeah, the Giants were 0-2 and they won.
Yeah, they were.
Right.
And so the Patriots in 0-1. So, in fact, four of the last seven teams that win the Super Bowl lost their first game of the year. So,
wow,
not
is that
yet.
Right? Wait a second.
Yeah,
four
of the last seven.
Four of the last seven?
0-1 Patriots. 0-2 Bucks.
Yeah.
0-3 Patriots. 31-0, by the way, the 0-3 Patriots,
right.
The Lawyer Malloy
right.
game. And then, of course, last year's Giants, who gave up 80 points in their first two games and came back 4 months later and won the Super Bowl. Again,
all right. So what you're saying then is we look at all the Week 1 losers and pick this year's Super Bowl winner out
there
of those teams.
There you go. And look at all the week one winners and realize even if they go undefeated, they don't have a chance in hell.
See, I can't make this stuff up. Only Russell Baxter knows this stuff. Unbelievable.
Lack of a social life has paid off for me, John. I'm telling you.
See, there is
but
hope for everybody.
It just shows you the nature of what, you know, you go back, and Tom Jackson and I talk about this often, you go back to those adages of, no 0-2 team can win a Super Bowl, no team that loses. I mean, all those, since free agency, have gone right out the window. A lot of that stuff. I mean, do you realize, in the last 11 years, John, I don't get off the two beaten track.
No, that's fine.
9 of the last 11 years, the team with the best record in this league has not won the Super Bowl.
That one, I think I knew.
Okay.
Somewhere in the recesses of my memory banks.
Right. 4 of the last 11 years, a wild card has won.
That one I also knew.
The
yeah.
97 Broncos, the 2000 Ravens, the Steelers and the Giants, who we mentioned before.
Right.
The first 31 years of the Super Bowl, and they didn't really have wild cards the first 4 years. One Super Bowl team was a wild card, one Super Bowl winner, and that was the 1980 Raiders with Jim Plunkett.
Right.
So the landscape has changed in terms of what it takes to get in and win. That's why I think we see the inconsistencies we see. It's funny, we see all these long winning streaks. Once a team starts winning, you think about the Patriots, their 21-game overall winning streak, which is the NFL record. Right now they've won 20 regular season games, which is an NFL record.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and yet then you see other teams. I mean, Kansas City's riding a 10-game losing streak. It's a league of streaks. If you get hot at the right time, it pays off. It happened for the Steelers a couple years ago. The Indianapolis Colts 2 years ago couldn't play defense to save their lives. And then in a span of 4 games in the playoffs, all of a sudden looked like the fearsome foursome and won a Super Bowl.
Right.
Okay, I mean, it's the streaking. Ray Stevens should do the national anthem from now on. Again, they call it the streak. That's what should be the new song for the NFL.
Wow. Now you're going back to the archive. Yeah,
well,
you are 49, aren't you?
Yeah, you're certainly right. You're certainly right. So,
but yet they call him the streak.
But that's just kind of what it's become. But, you know, the thing about this is a nice segue. I'll get right back to Indianapolis Minnesota. Okay?
Yep.
The thing that was almost peculiar about watching the Colts is that they lost opening day. Remember, this is a team a couple years ago was 13-0. They followed it up by finishing 9-0, opening 9-0 the year they won the Super Bowl. Remember, last year it was 7-0 before the Patriots beat them. So the last time the Colts lost their first two games, Peyton Manning was a rookie. It's been 10 years. So we're not used to see them getting off to a slow start. But I tell you, if their offensive line, which of course is missing Jeff Saturday, does not perform better than it did last week against the interior of that Vikings line,
mm-hmm.
and I say the interior because they really got the push going, you know, I know Jared Allen was a big off-season acquisition. A lot of draft picks, a lot of money and stuff. By the way, he did not have a tackle last week at Green Bay. Mm. He knocked down a pass, and that was only his real significant play of the game. But if the Colts don't get that push and are able to control the Williams brothers, not Serena and Venus, but Pat and Kevin, they're going to be in a lot of trouble again. And it brings me to a point I wanted to segue to. You know, at the end of the year last year, we saw a number of teams, and I throw out the Colts because they were as guilty as anyone. Kind of going through the motions, maybe the last couple weeks of the season, or the last game of the season. Tampa Bay, Dallas, Indy, Jacksonville. All came back and bit them in the tuchus when it came to the postseason. Would you agree?
Yeah.
I certainly remember the New York Giants playing their hearts out against New England, and of course New England did as well. And I'm not saying it's the only reason those two games got to, teams got to the Super Bowl, but you sensed it. And I bring up that point because it's the same thing with the preseason. I know people don't like the preseason. I know people get frustrated with the preseason. But you don't put a semblance of a team in there and think all of a sudden your guy or guys are just going to be able to show up and play professional football. It's not going to happen. Okay? John, you play golf?
Yes. Poorly, but yes, I play.
Yes. Well, let me ask you this. What's your handicap?
18.
Would it be better if you played more often?
Yeah, of course.
Is there any game, individual game, that requires more repetition than golf?
No.
Is there any game, you know, like any team sports, as much as anyone, requires as much repetition as professional football or any level of football?
Probably not.
Well, you know, if you're not practicing... You know, I sucked at the clarinet because I never practiced. Okay,
it's easy
why
to
I never
suck
got
the
any.
Clarinet.
Why I never got good. Okay.
Okay.
If you don't have some sort, I mean, Peyton Manning did not play the entire preseason, but they also lost their starting center. But they also are a team that, you know, a lot of times during the preseason, Peyton plays, but at least he's involved. I mean, you take Peyton Manning away from the Indianapolis Colts for the majority of the summer. Mm-hmm. There's no way they're going to have any cohesion. You take the starting center away in the preseason,
and
you put a rookie in there from Buffalo, and you're going against, you know, a quick defensive front like the Chicago Bears have, you're going to have problems.
Could they face
those same problems this week at Minnesota.
Could you have said the same thing about the Patriots if Tom Brady were still healthy?
Yes, to a degree. Absolutely. I mean, you know, you just can't. It depends on the other components as well. Okay? You know, the difference with the Colts is the Colts don't play a lot of guys necessarily. But the Colts circumstances is a little different because of the Saturday injury. Okay, I mean, you know the rapport that Jeff Saturday, I mean, Peyton Manning and him have basically been together 8 years. Okay, with the way they run their offense on, you know, up front, that's different. But, you know, but look at New England. You know, New England didn't have him for the whole preseason. They did have Matt Cassel, and they did still play, do what they had to do. They performed as if they were taking it serious. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay? I'm saying, in other words, it's you just can't show up and expect everything to just run smoothly. That's all.
Yeah.
I mean, but listen, we have all talked about New England losing Tom Brady. We've all forecast what was going to happen to him and stuff like that. I mean, you're going to hear it all weekend. Bottom line was, they still won the football game last week.
Yeah, they did.
They did win the football game, okay? I know it was against Kansas City, who's now lost 10 in a row. But the bottom line is they found a way. They toughened up at the goal line after a big play by Dwayne Bowe,
yeah,
and managed to win the football game,
yeah,
okay, after suffering that kind of loss. The Indianapolis Colts played at home last week against a team they beat in the Super Bowl a couple years ago, and they looked sloppy. They looked, you know, to a degree, flat.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and I'm not trying to dump all over Indianapolis and stuff, but I'm, you know, depending on the approach that you take to these games, and depending on what happens. See, the problem is if you don't take it seriously, and I'm not saying go out there and knock yourself out for four preseason games. I am really hoping in the next couple of years that the league does go to an 18 game regular season. I hope that nobody is upset with that.
You really think that'll happen?
Well,
I don't see how the owners give up two games of revenue like that, because you know as well as I do that the preseason is absolute gravy train.
Absolutely, but I think if you go two preseason games and 18 regular season games, and I'll just cite some examples. CFL, I know it's not the NFL. CFL plays 18 regular season games. The old USFL played 18 regular season games.
Yeah, look where they are.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not comparing leagues to leagues.
They still owe me money, by the way.
Oh, I mean, all $3 that they won. my point being is, if you are going to put guys on the field, have the incentive for it to maybe mean something.
Yeah.
And second off, opposed to even 20 years ago, there were mini camps, rookie camps, OTAs. You're together. It's more of a full-time job. Okay, you go back to the 60s and the 70s and to a degree the 80s. Before the money really became prominent, guys played football. Some of them had to get jobs in the off season. You know, they didn't make the money that they're making now. It's now more of a year time, and that's why they're required to be around. It's a full time responsibility rather than a, for lack of a better word, John, a part time job.
Right.
Okay. And I think now that you are together more, I still think you need some game conditions, but maybe you don't need as many game conditions as you used to. and stuff. I know this, the last couple of years, because of the preseason, you'll have some teams on opening day look pretty sharp. But for the most part, the football, the first couple of weeks, everybody's kind of, you know, trying to wipe the sleepies out of their eyes and get themselves together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's just one man's opinion.
No, and I value that opinion. I think I think the bottom line will be that the owners won't want to give up, you know.
Well, listen, they're not, I mean, there's going to be stumbles to it and so on, yeah. And I am just curious to see, John, what happens, with the CBA in flux right now.
Well, that's exactly what I mean. I mean,
yeah, and
because
I'm
that's coming up
something...
in the next year, and I wonder, something will change. We don't know what it will be, but
right.
I don't see the owners giving back a heck of a lot.
No, and here's what I'm curious. I threw this out to somebody last week, and because it's going to be put on the table in March, it sounds like, at the next owners meeting. I'm wondering, in the next 2 years before, you know, we get to 2011, if the league doesn't go to a 17-game season, just the next 2 years.
See, I think that's
and I know that makes it an oddity because not
right.
everybody will have the same amount of home games.
Right.
But 1 year you do one conference and 1 year you do the other, and
right.
it all equals out up to two.
Right.
And then once the new deal gets ratified, we go to an 18-game season.
Well,
I haven't talked to anybody about that. It's just, if you're going to experiment with it, maybe that's the way to do it.
I actually think that's viable. I think that is viable. I'd like to see it happen because I think you're right. The preseason, as it presently consists, is stupid.
Well, listen, if you're getting that much work year-round, okay, it's different. It used to be guys showed up out of shape or in shape,
you need
played themselves back into shape.
They had six games. They had
right.
six games up to 1979.
By the way, if you had... if you were the defending Super Bowl champion,
you had another game.
Seventh game.
You had seven games. Can you imagine? That's right. I remember that when the Super Bowl champion played the college All-Stars.
That's correct.
They played
that
at Chicago Soldier Field.
Right. See, you and I are the only two people that know that. I think
that may be. That may
okay.
be the case.
And that game in 76.
Old basketball.
Ended in a rainstorm, as a matter of fact, at Soldier Field, and that was the end of it. And
right.
stuff. But seven games. Imagine
right.
playing
seven
21 football games,
I know.
And seven of them don't count.
That's right. Yeah, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
All right, we'll go back to the schedule again because we sidetracked, but I like that. I like that we sidetracked. A couple of other games that I wanted to kind of point to. Another one in the AFC, Buffalo, with a very impressive opening week, playing at Jacksonville in their opener, and Jacksonville, of course, stumbled badly. And I'm just, again, wondering, is Buffalo as good, or is Jacksonville as bad, or is there a mix in between?
Well, you know, as much as we talk, I wax poetically about the Colts' problems.
Yeah.
I think they somewhat pale in comparison to what Jacksonville's going through right now. And remember, you know, they were already down Brad Meester on their offensive line.
Right, right.
This past week, they put two of their starting guards on IR. Manuai and Maurice Williams are out for the year. So you're talking about one of the best power football teams with Fred Taylor, Maurice Jones-Drew, who maul people with their lines. And they are down three-fifths of their starters on the offensive line. Now, I will say this about Buffalo. They did a lot of, as Boomer will say, Bills special teams. Saw a lot of chicanery last week. You know, Roscoe Parrish wasn't a trick play, but, the trick play with Brian Moorman throwing the touchdown pass. They also got a fumble recovery. Their special teams had a big hand in it. But over the last 2 years, Buffalo has gotten much, much better on its offensive and defensive lines. Now, they went down to Jacksonville last week. They were playing pretty well, and they got handled 36-14. I'm not going to be surprised if Buffalo carries a little momentum from last week, confidence-wise. Now, again, some trick plays, but I think anytime you open the season and you beat a perennial playoff team like Seattle, it can only help you confidence-wise. And I'm not going to be surprised at all if Buffalo goes down to Jacksonville, who is, on paper probably still the better team. But they might have the wrong things missing at the wrong time against a Buffalo team that people forget probably played with as much or more heart than any team in the league last year, given how many people they lost along the way, especially on defense.
Yeah. By the way, the latest line on that is an even game. So
yeah, and that's right. Listen, you take away, and obviously you can't, you take away, and they were absolutely, they gave up 94 points in the two games they lost to New England last year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you think about the one-point heartbreakers at home to Denver and Dallas. I'm not saying you eliminate those, okay? But, you take a closer look at the Bills' season, they've made a lot of strides to where they were a couple of years ago. And they seem to like their sophomore combo of Trent Edwards and Marshawn Lynch in the backfield.
Right.
They've gotten better. You know, they spent a lot of money in their offensive line last year, and I think it paid off handsomely. And this year, they stay healthy on defense. I think they're going to be an interesting factor.
Next week's Patriot opponent, of course, is Miami. Miami lost their opener barely to the Jets, this week's opponent. Miami gets to go on the road and take on Arizona. Arizona won their opener. Arizona's a slight favorite, but certainly a manageable favorite. And I'm wondering if you thought Miami was improved at all with Chad Pennington now running it.
Well, I think they are improved. They seem like they still have some issues in the secondary. You know, the touchdown passes they gave up to Brett Favre last week, one was a vintage Favre, whale back and throw it.
Right.
The other one looked like the infield fly rule was in effect.
Mm-hmm.
And it was almost a 10-point touchdown because it almost went through the uprights as well. I think Brett probably got away with one on that one. On the other hand, the Dolphins DBs lost the football. And that being said, Miami made a bit of a run at the end there. But, Arizona is intriguing. With Seattle as banged up as they are, and, whether you consider it a favorite stat or most amazing stat, and 1-0 doesn't make a season. But the Arizona Cardinals have not won a division title since 1975, when they were the St. Louis Cardinals. That's 33 years ago. You would have thought they might have snuck one in there, okay? They maybe smell a little blood in the water with the way Seattle's banged up. And, listen, it's been a long time since even the Cardinals got off to a 2-0 start, much less win a division title.
Right.
But this is one of those games that they're expected to win and need to win. Kurt Warner's had a good run starting with the second half of last year. They still got those pretty solid receivers. And, Edgerrin James comes off a 100-yard game. They really controlled the clock against San Francisco last week. I know the Niners coughed up the ball five times, but I expect Arizona to take care of business here if they're to be the team I think a lot of people think they are.
A couple of other games I wanted to touch on very quickly. One of them is a quote-unquote rivalry game, Pittsburgh playing at Cleveland. That, of course, is the Sunday night game on NBC. Pittsburgh was very impressive. Cleveland got to be kicking themselves a little bit, and Pittsburgh is a touchdown road favorite in this one.
Yeah, and that has to do with the fact that, like we mentioned earlier in the show, they've beaten the Browns 9 straight times. They've won at Cleveland the last 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
They've beaten the Browns 15 out of 16 times overall in their since then. They have really owned this series as of late. And last year, on opening day, they not only beat the Browns up, but Charlie Fry was so dreadful he got traded 2 days later to Seattle. Now, of course, that came with a good thing because Derek Anderson emerged as a Pro Bowl quarterback for them. But defensively, they also played the Steelers in Pittsburgh later in the year and blew a big lead. So defense has been the Achilles heel for them. You think of all the offensive numbers they put up last year, and yet they still weren't able to beat Pittsburgh. And last week, their defense, with all the changes that they have made, the Sean Rogers and the Corey Williams, and so on, to bolster that defensive line. I mean, Dallas, really kind of went through them like a hot knife through butter.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, I don't think it was their offense was overly dreadful, but I think the fact that they got so behind so early, and that could be a problem again this week. The one thing that was interesting about Pittsburgh is, there's a team last year that if you look at their numbers on the surface, you're like, wow, how could they only be 10-6? Especially, a long-standing Steeler thing is to run the football. And last year, one time Willie Parker was leading the league in rushing. Their final running numbers looked respectable. But they were a team last year that really ran via the pass. What you saw them do against Houston last week was kind of get back to the football they played 3 years ago. In 2005, up until the postseason, where they really controlled the clock with the run, and then threw when they wanted to throw. I mean, Ben Roethlisberger last week was 13 out of 14, but that was because their offensive line, save for a couple sacks of Mario Williams, I guess that deal worked out okay for Houston, really controlled them up front. And, it'll be interesting here if Pittsburgh can continue its domination. For the Browns to get themselves back on track, I mean, if they lost, they'd be 0-2, and that certainly doesn't put them behind. They'd be 2 games behind, but it's much too early to think about that. But psychologically, they need to finally hold serve at home and beat the Steelers in their own building.
Let me jump on one more here before we go back to the Pats, and that's your game on Monday night, the ESPN game, Philadelphia at Dallas, two teams that had pretty good opening wins, and Philadelphia, for the most part, not getting a lot of respect in the NFC East, which, by the way, I think right now is hands down the best division in the NFL. Cowboys looked okay, and the Cowboys are at home.
Yeah, and, you know, both these teams look pretty impressive coming out of the gate. Yeah, they like what you saw from both of them. And let's not only forget, Philadelphia went into Dallas last year late in the year and beat the Cowboys.
Yes, they did.
If there's any cause for disrespect on, you know, on the Cowboys' part, I think they know what kind of football team Philadelphia is. You know, I mean, we have a tendency sometimes, and Dallas, I think, was kind of the anointed favorite in the NFC this year, you know, bolstered by their own roster, and then, of course, the additions of, like, Zach Thomas and Adam Jones and so on. But, you know, the fact remains is these teams know each other very, very well. Andy Reid knows the Cowboys very, very well. He's had a lot of success against them. In fact, they've won the last 2 years in Dallas. Now, of course, Dallas came up on a Sunday night and whacked them pretty good up in Philadelphia.
Right.
So these two teams know each other well, but it was nice to see Donovan McNabb pick up where he kind of left off late last year, and he had a big game pass. Remember when they beat the Cowboys last year in Dallas? That had as much to do with McNabb's legs as it did his arms. And of course, I think the play that everybody remembers from last year was Brian Westbrook running for an insurance touchdown and then stopping 1 yard short of the goal line in order to kill more time off the clock. So it was maybe the greatest non-score in recent memory. You know, talk about an unselfish guy who knew that if he scored a touchdown, and he was reminded, I believe, the story goes by John Runyon, you know, if you get there, we can kill more clock. But that was one of the more memorable things, I think, that happened last season in terms of this rivalry as well. But you have to like the way both teams came out of the gate. This is certainly not going to be any easy game for the Dallas Cowboys, given the fact that, I agree with you, from top to bottom, you know, the best division of football. And I think that was the case last year as well. I know the better numbers belong to the AFC South. But I think from top to bottom, just as far as, you know, solid, you know, Philadelphia was capable of beating just about anyone at the end of the year last year.
Right.
So it'll be interesting. I think Dallas probably holds serve and gets back on track at least at home in this rivalry. Again, they've lost the last 2 years to the to the Eagles at home. But I won't be surprised if Philadelphia goes in there and wins. Not at all, because I think these are two teams very much on the rise. And while I know it'll be difficult for Dallas to duplicate 13 wins from a year ago, mainly because it's very rare that it ever happens for any team, you have to like the confidence level in which they played at in Cleveland last week.
Right. That brings us back full circle then. The Pats and the Jets then, 4:15 Eastern Time at Giants Stadium on Sunday. This overall series, as we talked about earlier, where the Patriots have won 10 out of the last 11 in the series and 7 straight at the Meadowlands, the overall series is deadlocked, 48-48-1 all time. 98th meeting between these two teams. That's a lot of football.
Yeah, it is, and it's had it's very interesting moments. I mean, of course, last year was all the controversy from the opening day win.
That's what we like about this game, because
we talk about
rivalries in the NFL and how we wish we could go back and get the days, the good old days of the Cowboys Redskins type thing. Mm-hmm. This, to me, along with maybe the Patriots and the Colts, has an opportunity to be there. You need one team though to be appreciably better than they have been.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's, you know, and as far, you know, if you go back, you know, you talked about great rivalries and stuff, and you know, there have been great rivalries, with a certain disdain factor that is kind of carried over, off the field because of other things that happen and stuff. I mean, you know, Bill Belichick being the Jets coach for one day. You know, the Curtis Martin, the Patriots not matching the offer sheet and he becomes a New York Jet. You throw all those different things in and stuff like that. It kind of harkens back to disdain-wise almost the old Raiders Steelers of the 70s when they were not only busy playing each other in the playoffs 5 years in a row, they were battling in court over the criminal element in the NFL. And, you know, things that happened in, Pittsburgh hotels, the Raider players and, accusations of, you know, the Raiders writing, you know, putting bad graffiti on footballs and some, all that kind of schoolyard type of stuff that spilled over not only onto the football field, but, you know, off the realm of football in general. Right. And you kind of have a kind of a smattering of that with these teams. You know, you need, you know, components when you have a guy who was a former defensive coordinator turned head coach of a team, that certainly helps. But you hit the big chord there was, it's a rivalry in that sense. It has not been necessarily a rivalry in the sense of on the field because there's been a domination by one franchise over another. And until the Jets learn to end that regard, and, you know, Brett Favre to the rescue, I understand that. I mean, there's a lot to be said to that, but I need to see it happen first. And I need to see it happen in this building for the Jets first because, again, you know, the Patriots have played seven games there the last 7 years against the Jets, not even counting the Giants game, haven't lost. So, you know, fool me once, fool me seven times. Let's see what happens. And until the Jets, I mean, confidence-wise, it would be an enormous for the Jets to win. I think I will also say that a Patriots win this week with a new quarterback and given the changes the Jets have made, depending on how the game would unfold, could be a loss possibility that the Jets might scratch their head about as well.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Depending on how they play, I'm just going to say automatically the Jets lose and it's back to the drawing board. But there's a lot of stock put into this game. And so on the, you know, they built their team in a certain way. You always build your team in a way that beat the teams within your own division.
Right.
Okay, that's the foremost thing. And even before Brett Favre there was a concentrated effort by the Jets to bolster their talent, get it more 3-4 oriented, bolster their offensive line, which they added, you know, Alan Faneca and Damon Woody. They looked like they were going to be an improved team regardless of the Favre acquisition. Favre is kind of like maybe the cherry on the sundae. But here's what the most important thing. Divisional games hold serve at home. And that's what they need to do to take that next step.
That's true. This game is going to boil down, in my opinion, to whether or not the Patriots' offensive line can find a way to take the pressure off of Matt Castle against an improved Jets defensive line. The Patriots want to simplify, I think. It makes sense to think that they want to simplify things somewhat for Castle. So it means running the ball. Can they run the ball against the Jets, and can they keep the ball out of Brett Favre's hands?
Well, I think they can. I mean, I know they have worked on bolstering that run defense in New York and so on, but, you know, the Patriots still feature a pretty good offensive line. And, you know, if they can find a way to kind of loosen up what the Jets do, you know, when you go to that 3-4, pure 3-4, and you play it right, there's no better defense against the run. That being said, you know, I think the Patriots, regardless of the Brady injury, were looking like they might play a different style offense last year. I didn't think they could come into this year and do what they did last year. Okay, too much school done on them. I think they needed to be more like the Patriots of 2004, which, you know, even though Tom Brady had a very, very good year, I mean, they had got a big, big year from Corey Dillon. And Corey Dillon was a big factor for them in the postseason as well. I mean, I know Brady is Brady and so on, but the thing that intrigued me about the Patriots winning those three Super Bowls, John, and disagree, if you will, they won them all three different ways. They won them three different styles. You know, they were a different team with a young quarterback when they won it in 2001 and really won it with defense and special teams. In 2003, they were a little more pass-oriented, even though they had Antoine Smith. And in 2004, they completely shifted.
Yep.
And they looked like a much better defensive team, and they were much more of a running team. In fact, that 2004 team was their most balanced team of the three Super Bowl winners.
Right. Yeah, I would say, yeah, 04, yeah, I'd go along with that. I would, yeah.
Yeah. Balance-wise, play-calling-wise and stuff, they were a very balanced football team.
Yep.
And when you're balanced like that and you run the football like that, it also takes the pressure off your defense. And also, hint, hint, it saves those older legs, hint, hint, on maybe an older defense, too.
Right. Russell, it's great to talk to you again, my friend.
You too.
Thank you for speaking.
Over too. Oh my God, time flies. Time flies when you're
when you got a
recapping
lot.
9 months.
Yeah, really. You're going to recap all these months that it's been since we've had you on the program last. So I want you to know that it's greatly appreciated that you take a little time to visit with us here and talk, you know, football, and not only just about the Patriots, about touching on things around the NFL that can affect the Patriots and, you know, with their opponents and things like that. And I think that means a lot to Pats fans, especially those that take the time to listen to this program on a daily and or weekly basis.
Well,
so,
I just assume that's everybody anyway, so.
We get a lot of draws from our podcasts. You know, people that can't listen live, but they will download the podcast after hours, after we're off live now. And that's been one of the biggest improvements, we think, to the website, is having all of our programming now available via podcast. And we get quite a few hits that way.
So that means they can just replay what we say over
absolutely.
And over and
over, and over
again.
Yeah, until they finally believe it.
Or they can just maybe mix in like a little Rihanna with the, you know, a little music.
Yoo-hoo, Baxter! Yoo-hoo, Baxter! Yoo-hoo, Baxter!
That reminds me, I might go get a Yoo-hoo.
Yeah. You know? Good job. Hey, all right. Thank you. Talk to you soon. We'll see you next
John.
Week.
Okay, John. Talk right. to you next week.
Thank you, Russell.
Appreciate it. Russell Baxter from ESPN NFL Research Coordinator. He will join us every week here on Thursdays Inside Patriots Playbook. I've got some other emails I want to get to, and then we're going to hear from Matt Cassel, correct? Is that what we're doing today? We're hearing from Matt Cassel today? Was it his conference call or his locker room interview? In the locker room today. So, we'll want to bring that to you as he met members of the Patriots media primarily, in the locker room following practice today. So we want to bring that to you here inside the playbook and get you his thoughts on getting ready for his first NFL start that really means something. In the meantime, let's get to some of the other emails. Those of you that have taken the time to email here today, and again, it's appreciated. Webradio@patriots.com. We were looking for, number one, would you go after Jeff Garcia if available? And number two, what you think the score for Sunday's game between the Pats and the Jets will be. Dan O'Keefe writes, and he says he's a longtime Patriots fan. He says, I would not go after Jeff Garcia. You have what you need right now I'm not sure what that is. Looks like it's garbled. It says Bill likes that choice. I'm sure it's talking about Cassel. That choice because he can now move the team and score touchdowns. So why bring in another QB? Well, I suppose that's true, Dan. But we say, well, why not bring in somebody who has the experience of getting his team to the playoffs? And should Matt Cassel fail, why wouldn't you want to bring in somebody who has more experience than, say, oh, I don't know, a rookie and Kevin O'Connell? Not to denigrate O'Connell at all. But the Patriots' track record has been to bring rookies along slowly. Why throw him in there if he's not really ready? Garcia makes too much sense. This one, let's see, comes from Spence in Washington, D.C. He says, John, great to have another season of Patriots Playbook. I was waiting all offseason for the return of the best radio show in sports. I had to say that. Thank you, Spence. Oh, gosh. I'll hire you as my agent. Anyway, on to the Pats. All this Garcia, Chris Sims, Culpepper, washed-up, mistake-prone veteran talk is nonsense. We as Patriots fans often talk about how important it is to play mistake-free football, especially without Brady, is the key. Every single one of those quarterbacks has a history of blowing it with a bad INT or fumble. Garcia lost the game for the Bucs last week in the final seconds with an interception. Either way, let's get real. Cassel played a fairly decent mistake-free game last Sunday. Let's see what he does with the Jets. And he messes up, give him until the bye week, and then give O'Connell a chance. I know this is somewhat maverick John McCain coaching, but the Patriots have always been a meritocracy. And O'Connell, oh, that's another good word for the day, meritocracy, kids. And O'Connell showed up in a big way this preseason. Brady won us our first championship in his second year off of a fluke injury, not unlike this year with Brady. With all that being said, Patriots over Jets, 24-20. Cassel will manage the game enough to win. Brett with a couple of humdingers that Hobbs and Harrison will pluck from the air. Let's go Pats. All right, Spence. Thanks for that. Good stuff. You know, I don't really disagree with anything you say, but I'm thinking, well, you know what? If something does happen to Cassel and he does not move the team or does not play effectively enough, I mean, you know, chances are 50-50 right now. In theory, you know, he can either play well enough to manage it or play not well enough and the Patriots lose. And let's just err on the side of caution. If he doesn't do well, all you have is rookie Kevin O'Connell. Why would you want to try to ruin the guy? Why wouldn't you want to bring in somebody who would gladly take the fall if that's what needs to be happen in a guy like Garcia? Plus, you'd have to think the odds would be on his side. He's a veteran. He knows how to get the job done. Does he make mistakes? Sure. All quarterbacks do. Just saying that, you know, if you don't have to give up anything for him, why wouldn't you want to? John says, I'm so glad you're back. Welcome to the 08 season. I've had at least 12 of my coworkers ask me if I was all right after Sunday. It's like the day after Super Bowl 42 all over again. I'm not at all worried about the season. That may sound like I'm just a homer, but when every media meathead declared the Pats season over, I was insulted. Let's remember that as amazing as Brady is, there are 52 other guys out there that want to win every week. They all made it sound like Brady commanded a high school football team and that we're nothing without him. I feel completely confident that this team will step up. Cassel will be sufficient. Bill will adjust as needed, and we will still take the AFC East. As for the question of Belichick or Brady, that's more useless fodder. Is it Bruschi or Harrison?
Is it Dean Pease or Josh McDaniel? The question to me is by design, made to make this team second-guess themselves as they are too disciplined to buy into it. As for Sunday, I think we surprise everyone. Favre will be hit, sacked, rushed, and throw interceptions, having himself a terrible game for their home opener. And I think that Monday morning, all the media meatheads will somehow still tell the world how bad we are and that a Jets win is just a fluke. Pats 24, Jets 14. He says, oh, the topic. I would definitely get Garcia if the price is right. All right, John, thank you. Let's see. Next is our friend Howard in Orange, Connecticut. Howard says, I wouldn't give up a first-day pick for Garcia, but Belichick has always been all about creating competition. So bringing in Garcia as the number two would create pressure on Castle to perform immediately, which I don't believe he currently has with the rookie O'Connell as his number two. Don't get me wrong. He, Castle, is under pressure as the new starter, but it's not the same as if there is someone right there behind ready to step in and take your job. You know, that's a good point. Good point, Howard. And one that had not entered into my thought processes but will now. That could help. It could be just the edge to get him on track or maybe even keep him on track. And Howard says, Pats 24, Jets 20. I think the D and the special teams help win this one more than the offense. Okay. Barty says, what is the reason to believe that we will have a chance to do well without Brady when Coach Belichick has a very mediocre winning stat prior to Brady as a head coach? Well, I guess the proof is definitely in the pudding. I think you have to believe primarily in the roster that they've built up here. That, you know, when you've got, you know, eight or so Pro Bowl caliber players, according to last year's, you know, Pro Bowls, if you believe that at all, then frankly, you have to think that this team has done enough in terms of building themselves up internally to where they have more than just a quarterback. Now, it is true that Belichick has done well with Brady, and before that, he didn't. But he didn't have the chance. He had it just come in. He didn't have the chance to build the franchise. He's built the franchise along with Brady as the quarterback. So let's see now if the franchise, if the foundation, in other words, is strong enough to survive the earthquake, if you will, that losing Tom Brady has presented. I think most people realize, Barty, that this team is strong and should remain relatively strong without Brady as the quarterback, based on the players that you brought in. Barbara says, Jeff Garcia, no way. The score on Sunday, Pats 17, Jets 14 in overtime. Both quarterbacks have a lot to prove, but I think our defense will step up and halt the Jets from scoring. One comment, first, love your show. Second, it's all well and good to say that a team shouldn't fall apart because one player is gone, but the quarterback is the catalyst of the team. No doubt. No doubt, Barbara. I just happen to think, though, that, yes, the quarterback is the catalyst, but the quarterback also needs to be a manager more than anything else. He doesn't need to be the catalyst. Some are. Some are, without a doubt, dynamic, spectacular, flashy kind of guys, you know, that can, you know, very few, but some can put the team on their shoulders and will them to a win. I don't think Matt Castle has to be that kind of guy. I think he's got enough support around him. He's got the same weapons that Tom Brady had to throw to and hand off to. And, of course, he had nothing to do with the defense. The defense still has to be improved. Let's see if this coaching staff, and let's see if Belichick, the GM, and Scott Pioli, let's see if they did what they thought they should do, and let's see if they're successful with that in sort of retooling this defense in the offseason. That's completely been overlooked in all this, oh, my God, the season's over talk. You know, the team went out and addressed defense first based on what we saw in the Super Bowl because they're getting a little long in the tooth, especially in the linebacking core. Gerard Mayo has done a pretty good job, I would say, for this early stage in his professional career. We've seen Mike Vrabel become unleashed, had two sacks last week. Yeah, it was Kansas City, but it's a great start nevertheless. Let's see what happens. Let's give them a chance. Let's give these guys an opportunity. Max says, I believe the Pats would have gone 16-0 with Brady this year. Castle, 12-4. I don't think Brady is four games. I just think this because the team will step up. They always do step up when needed. And my prediction for Sunday, 23-20. Favre will throw two picks. All right, I'm assuming you're thinking Patriots 23-20 on that one. Keith, in Central Florida, just wanted to drop a quick email about the show. I like both PFW and Patriots playbook, but I have to say that I like playbook much better than PFW because it's all Patriots and football talk along with other opinions and guests. Were you recording that? Play that one for the other guys, right? Eric, don't listen to all the... Yeah. Eric, don't listen to all the idiots and adolescents that email into PFW. Patriots Playbook is a good show and is for the smarter and more knowledgeable Pats fan.
Oh, I would rather slam dance butt naked with a porcupine than go through that again.
How many years ago was that one, by the way? Do you even remember?
To any Steeler fans listening, you all suck.
That was a setup job, by the way, because I was reading an email. What else do you have?
I like masculine guys. Brady is too girly for me.
Well, I guess it's right that I have Eric on the show then, right?
The leader of the gang.
Okay. Thank you, that. Okay, let's knock me down a peg or six. I don't always have a chance to chime in because of being at work, but keep up the good work and go Pats. Yes, thank you, Keith. I would take a chance on Garcia if the price is right, he says. I'll be in your neck of the woods tomorrow, Keith. I'll be in Central Florida for the USF-Kansas game. Where's my horn? Come on. I got to get in a plug. Thank you. Thank you very much. I'll be doing the national radio broadcast for Kansas at USF. Thank you. Okay. Let's see. Oh, this is Dear Not Fred from William. Should I read this? Oh, okay. Roundtable panel, not sure Pats are a playoff team. Hard to find somebody, huh? Open your bleeping eyes. William Barry. What does that mean? I'm not sure the Pats were a playoff team. I'm not sure who that was addressed to. So, okay. Anyway. Stripper sends me a note. Says, "Does Texas send soft players to the NFL? He says, Vince Young wants to quit. Ricky Williams smoked weed over and over. Cedric Benson is out of the league already. Does Mack Brown send sissies to the NFL who can't handle the NFL? Well, let's see. Honestly, strippers, that's tough to say. I mean, would you call guys like Steve McMichael? Well, he wasn't sent by Mack Brown, but would you call Steve McMichael, you know, a sissy? How about a guy like Ross, defensive back for the New York Giants? Is he a sissy? Who else has been? I mean, you know, we can go up and down the list. You're just kind of picking on a few here because you know you're a freaking Oklahoma fan, which is fine. That's okay. Yeah, I don't mind you. You still listen anyway. All I know is that most of our players, at least to my knowledge, most of our players don't carry guns to class or, you know, pick off players or, you know, shoot people in the dorms or things like that, like, you know, Oklahoma players have been accused of doing in the past. So there, you want to bring up dirty laundry? I can bring up dirty laundry too. How's that? There you go. Boomer Sooner. Boom that. We'll see you in October. And then, of course, Oklahoma will win the game. damn. I'm one of those few Texas fans that would not be terribly unhappy if they went 1-11, but that one was over OU. Okay? That's just me. Here is the Week 2 participation injury report, which is just now out for the Patriots. And today, Sam Aiken and Benjamin Watson did not participate in practice with their respective knee injuries. Limited participation from Eric Alexander, Jabbar Gaffney, Ellis Hobbs, Randy Moss, and Lewis Sanders. Everybody else, full participation in practice today. All right, so there you go. There's the update from practice today. We will end the program with a little Barry White, baby. Yeah, baby. And also give you a chance to listen in to Patriots starting quarterback Matt Cassel. It's his first start in any meaningful football game since 1999. And he gets his NFL starter debut this Sunday against the Jets. Obviously, we know he's filling in some very big shoes. Question is he up for the task? Had a chance to hear from Matt Cassel in the Patriots locker room, visiting with members of the Patriots media from earlier today. And we'll be back next Tuesday for our next edition of Patriots Playbook right here on Patriots.com Radio.
Tom paid a visit yesterday. Just tell us about that and what he had to say to you guys.
He's just words of encouragement. Just go out there and execute and have fun and win and do the things that you need to do.
How important will his support be to you throughout the season?
His support has been important to me for the last 4 years, and so it'll continue to be important, and I'll continue to lean on him for support and for guidance.
Yeah.
Is it tough to remember to have fun when it seems like this is such a pressurized situation?
Well, once you get to the field, it's business as usual. It's more of the outside distractions that if you let it become a distraction, it will become a distraction. So for me, it's just go and play ball as usual and try to have fun and realize that it is a game and it's a fun game and that you've been doing it for a long time and go out there and enjoy it.
What are some of the things you're doing to minimize those outside distractions?
We'll not watch a lot of TV and not read the papers and just go out there and really study the game plan and focus on what I need to do when it comes to football.
And what is the best advice you've gotten from Tom?
It's really just to focus on football, that there's going to be a lot of outside distractions. There's going to be a lot of people that want your time right now. And really, the focus on what's important, and that's to help this team win.
Now, do those four preseason starts become even more valuable now because you got to work with a lot of the ones, maybe not all of them, but a lot of them?
It definitely becomes very valuable to get out there and have four starts under your belt before you even start the season, and then get in there and get that first win under my belt last week. So it's exciting, and we're definitely going down to the Jets, not just to play well, we're going down there to win.
What do you anticipate your feelings might be when you're getting ready to come out on the field Sunday afternoon?
It'll be the same as usual. You know, I'm just going to go out there and I'm going to do what I've done in the past and prepare as hard as I can and put myself in a good position to be successful and have fun.
What do you remember about your last start in high school? Did you guys win? Did you play well? Was it a huge game?
It was a long time ago, but we lost to Pauley, but it was in the third round of playoffs and it was a lot of fun, and I think we played well, but we rushed the ball better. So.
Is it tougher to prepare as a starter or as a backup who has to go in at a moment's notice?
I think the toughest job in football is probably always to be the starter, because everybody looks to you for guidance and everybody looks for you to get out there and perform. So that's definitely the toughest. But the second definitely is being a backup quarterback, because you had a moment's notice like it happened last week. You never anticipate it, and you hope it never happens due to injury, but it comes up in this game a lot, and you just have to be prepared.
Matt, how much of a difference do you think it really makes that you haven't started a game since high school?
It really doesn't make a huge difference. We've been training, and the coaches get us prepared week in and week out. And if the coaching staff didn't believe that I could execute the offense, I wouldn't be here right now. So there's something to be said about that, and it's what it is.
Does it still seem funny to go out to practice and not see Tom there?
It is and it isn't. It's one of those things. As a team, you have to rally and close ranks and move on. And unfortunately, we'd all love Tom to be here, but the fact is he's not, and we got to move on as a team, and we can't look back and hope and wish and do those things that a lot of other people are doing. We have to move on, and we have to get ready for this week.
You talk about the Jets defense and what you expect.
They're a good defense. You know, they have a great scheme. They disguise well. They have they've made some off-season acquisitions with Pace and Jenkins, and Lowry's playing at the corner at the rookie position. He's playing well right now, and Revis, and Rhodes is one of the top safeties in the league. So we've got our work cut out for us, and they're a great defense, and they'll create a lot of problems for us. Hopefully not too many, but, you know, we'll be studying hard on them.
What do you bring to the table that Tom might not? How are you different?
I don't really like to make comparisons to myself and Tom. Tom is who he is, and he was the MVP of the league last year. And I am who I am, so I'm just going to go out and try to execute and play my game, and whatever that might be, we'll see come Sunday.
What do you think your strengths are?
Hopefully I have a lot of strengths, and it really, like I said, I don't want to get into breaking down my game versus Tom, and I don't want to say, you know, he throws the ball better than me, or I throw the ball, or I can run or do those kind of things. We're different quarterbacks, and that's how it's going to be, and we're going to go out there, and we're both going to try to accomplish the same things, which are get wins.
Does it help that you're playing a defense that is kind of the same as the one that you've been facing in practice with Jets?
Well, they're very similar to us in many ways, but they're very different in many ways. So it's one of those things where you have to go out and every week you play a different defense and get ready for a different defense. So Kansas City was very different from what the Jets are going to be. And while they're similar to what we see in practice every day, like I said, there's a lot of differences that we have to prepare for. I became a lot more popular after Sunday's game. There's no doubt about that. So I think I had around 150 text messages, and half the numbers I don't even know. So.
And what is it usually?
Huh?
What is it usually?
My mom.
Yeah.
My mom. I talk to my brothers all the time. So, there's constant conversations between us, and they're a great support factor for me because they're in the sports and they're in the spotlight and they know the ups and downs of this game. And so it's something that I constantly lean on them.
Any wise, big brotherly advice that they've given you?
Not really, you know, just go out there and have fun.
Do you see Jack's career, you know, trying to make his way through the minor leagues, being sort of similar to the trajectory that you've taken? Did you have to show some patience?
Well, both of us are in our careers. I guess you could say we face a little adversity, and we can continue to push forward, and we can continue to, you know, go through those tough times. But at the same time, once you persevere and you get through it and you get to a time like this where you finally reach what you've been working so hard for, it's all worth it.
Matt, when you left high school, I mean, did you ever dream in your wildest mind that it'd take 9 years for you to start again?
Not really, but it's
frustrating.
It's not frustrating. It's just the course that it's gone, and you know, I'm here now, and I'm looking forward to it.
Does it make you angry that some people have already written the Patriots off?
You know, it is what it is. There's going to be a lot of people that make predictions on the outside, and well, you can't do anything to control it. Nobody can foresee the future, and nobody can say we're going to win 15 games or lose 15 games or do whatever. All we can do as a team is rally and gather together and work hard and go out there and put out a good performance on Sunday.
You're going to be deciding to go to college. How much did that factor in? Who else was going to be there? Was it a surprise to you that it was you behind the depth chart the whole time, or did you expect to be a starter in college?
No, I came in behind Carson, and Carson obviously did it very well in college and was the Heisman Trophy winner, and then I competed versus Matt. Matt came in a year after I did, and the coaches just decided to go that way. So it's one of those things where you can't really look back and do the what-if thing, but I definitely anticipated being a starter there, and it didn't happen, but at the same time, I ended up here now, so it all worked out. Pro Day was very important for me. That really was the only time that I had to prove that I could play at the NFL level, and that was really through the physical drills that they put me through, which was running and throwing the ball, and it turned out pretty well for me. I had a good performance and sparked some interest.
How tough has it been for you to be an understudy for all these years?
You know, you just kind of you fall into that role and you continue to work hard and you learn a lot from these different quarterbacks, from Carson, from Linehart, and from Tom especially over these last 4 years, and you start to take its little bits and pieces from each of their games and try to use that in your game and try to get better.
You think you'll have some butterflies on Sunday?
I hope not. I hope not.
Were you surprised when you were drafted simply, you know, you were good, but simply because you didn't have much of a track record they could look at? Were you surprised that you were drafted at all?
Well, you know, I was pretty surprised, I'm not going to lie. Yeah. Without as much college film, a lot of people had written me off already, and then when the Patriots called, I was pretty happy. It was a good day.
Did you go to the combine?
No, I didn't go to the combine.
Matt, how would you describe to somebody what it's like to wait 9 years to get to do what you wanted to do and what you've been training to do for so long?
How would I describe it?
Like what has it been like with 9 years?
You know, it really hasn't been that big of a struggle for me. It's just go in and get your work done and get ready when that opportunity comes. And it's here now. And did I think that it was going to take as long as it did? No. But at the same time, I went and had a great education at USC. I had a great experience there. And then I came here and I've learned behind the best for the last 4 years. So all in all, it's not that bad.
What were your feelings as the summer wound down? And, you know, we all thought, okay, it's a battle for number two spot. Were you concerned that maybe Matt would beat you out? And, you know, what were the indications you were getting?
I was confident in how I played in preseason, and it's obviously evident when the coaching staff says we trust you and you're the number two guy. And a lot of people don't see what goes on internally and can't break down the film and do that. And so I was getting good feedback from the coaches throughout and was confident from their feedback of where I was at.
Are you taking any added joy in playing well this weekend, given that in all bars in New York, when Brady went down, they were cheering upon his injury and wanting to see you come in? You know, any added that, you know, trying to do well and prove those cheers wrong?
I was just happy to do well and be able to be there for the team and be able to go out and put together a few scoring drives and win the game. And ultimately, that's what it comes down to, is a winning quarterback. And I just can't understand for the life of me why people would cheer when somebody gets hurt, but I guess that's the sick world sometimes that we are in.
Matt, Jeff Hostetler addressed the team a couple of weeks ago at training camp, and I was just curious if you, more than others, might have taken what he said to heart.
It's always interesting to hear older players come back and talk, but in particular it was very encouraging and interesting to hear Jeff come in and speak to the team, and I actually got a chance to meet him after the practice, and his situation was very similar to mine. He went in, the New York Giants are, 10-0 at the time, and Sims goes down, and nobody's ever heard of Jeff, so he goes in and leads them to the Super Bowl. And it's happened throughout the history of the NFL, and I'm not predicting anything. I'm just saying that people can be successful even though they might not be well-known. We just talked about playing that position, and he had to wait 6 years and didn't throw a pass in the NFL until he got his opportunity. So that just goes to show you, as long as you keep working hard and keep putting one foot in front of another, you can have success in this league.
Any public speaking class at SC prepare you for this?
Not at all. I'm getting a little hot. I'm not going to lie. Maybe we need to put a fan in here next week.
I'm just happy to be here. Hope I can help the ball club.